Good morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel, and today we're going to talk about the flurry of gun control legislation that's been introduced in the Roundhouse up in Santa Fe by lawmakers who largely say they want to reduce gun violence in New Mexico, although their strategies are different as to how to approach this issue. We do invite your calls and comments today. The number locally here in Albuquerque is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can send emails to callinshow@kunm.org. You can also post your comments online. And the question is, what does gun control legislation mean for New Mexico? Do you support some of these bills? Are you opposed to some of them? What do you think about this issue here in New Mexico? We would like to hear from you. First, joining us this morning to discuss, we have Julianne Grimm. She is a reporter with the Santa Fe New Mexican, and she's been doing some of that paper's reporting on the issue. Good morning, Julianne. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Elaine.
So the one bill that we've heard the most about, at least that's received kind of the most coverage, is a bill that would change the process for background checks here in New Mexico. Explain, this is one that was in a committee last week and didn't make it through, and then the bill was rewritten a bit and is now, I believe, still with the Judiciary Committee. There was a hearing on Monday this week about it. We haven't heard a vote yet from this committee. This bill was introduced by Representative Miguel Garcia from the South Valley. What would that bill do, and what are some of the critiques of the bill?
So you're right. We've seen several versions of this bill already. In fact, at Monday night's hearing before the House Judiciary Committee, in the hallway, after about 7 hours of hearings on other bills, the Republicans and Democrats were still exchanging versions of the bill. And so we actually saw a couple versions that were not discussed on Monday night. So the original proposal would expand background checks a little bit in New Mexico. You know, right now background checks are required if you buy a weapon from a federally licensed firearm dealer, and typically that's your gun store, pawn shop. What Representative Garcia is looking at is what he calls closing the gun show loophole, which is that you can go to a gun show and purchase a weapon from another collector, an individual, without undergoing the federal background check. His bill also addresses sales between individuals, which I think is the most controversial piece of it. And so that's looking at, you know, selling your pistol to your next-door neighbor or selling your rifle to your grandson. And so the law contemplates, that the proposal anyway, contemplates some exceptions. One of them, of course, is transferring weapons to your family. And so I think that's the meat, and that's where you're really going to see the Republicans and Democrats kind of butt heads on that part of the bill.
Well, and the new version of the bill kind of changed the kind of like the reporting process for those background checks, I guess. The agency that would be responsible for doing the background checks in these instances, these increased instances for background checks. Explain that a little bit.
So the law that everyone's familiar with is referred to as the Brady Bill. That's the federal government legislation that was enacted after an assassination attempt on President Reagan. And that bill required background checks for purchases from those federal dealers. The way that New Mexico and lots of other states comply with that is by accessing the FBI instant criminal check system. And so a gun dealer today will have you fill out a form, and they will call up the FBI to access that information. Lots of other states use their Department of Public Safety to do those checks. And so the representative's original proposal really interjected the Department of Public Safety into the process. And of course, that would require some associated funding, appropriations, and the Department of Public Safety is already fairly stressed out. So I think that was where you heard some backlash, if you will. I'll say, though, that there's been some discussion I've heard coming from the governor's office that New Mexico's not getting access to all of the federal grant money that would be available to make sure that our records are up to date, that the FBI has the most up-to-date records. And if the Department of Safety took on that role instead of currently the Administrative Office of the Courts does it, we would maybe be able to access more funding. And so you might see something amend the bill on that front.
Got it. Let's talk about a few of the other proposals. In addition to this bill from Representative Garcia expanding background checks in New Mexico, there are several concealed carry proposals. Talk about those.
Yeah, there's at least five proposals that have to do with gun legislation that I'm aware of at the legislature. And of course, we're still in the period of time where new bills could be introduced. But right now, we're looking at least three proposals that have to do with changes to our state's concealed carry law. Basically, one proposal from Senator Sue Wilson Beffert would allow a designated teacher to carry a concealed weapon in every public school in the state. There's another bill, House Bill 454, introduced by Representative Anderson, which would make that provision for judges, that a judge with a concealed carry permit would be able to sit on the bench with the weapon under the robe. Then we've got a proposal from Debbie Rodella that actually has a hearing today at the House Business and Industry Committee. That one has to do with carrying your concealed weapon into an establishment that sells liquor, which is currently
prohibited, right?
Yeah, yes. And then we've got another one that's kind of an outlier. This one was introduced by Representative Easley, and it's House Bill 402, and it addresses this elusive term assault weapons and makes a proposal anyway that the state of New Mexico would regulate certain firearms with certain characteristics.
What is the law now with respect to assault weapons? Do you know?
Well, that term really, there's been a lot of debate about where it comes from, but certainly what a lot of people are familiar with is what's called the Clinton-era assault weapons ban. This was in place, in the 90s. It basically establishes some characteristics of weapons, including, that it has the ability to attach a silencer, that it has something called a pistol grip, that it could... you could affix it with a magazine that has a high capacity. There's all these characteristics. And if a weapon has one or more of them, it's considered an assault weapon. Those weapons are all legal right now because that ban expired. And so you've heard both, President Obama, you hear Representative Easley. Even this has come up in the city of Santa Fe that some city councilors said, can we ban assault weapons here? And, of course, the city attorney there said the Constitution prohibits a city from regulating that. And that still seems to be up for debate at the city council in Santa Fe.
We're talking about gun control in New Mexico, or as I called it in the kind of headline for this show, the Wild, Wild West. And we'd like to hear from you this morning. What are your thoughts on these pieces of legislation that lawmakers have introduced in Santa Fe? The number to call locally is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can send an email to callinshow@kunm.org. You can also post your comments online. Let's go to the phones now. Jim in Santa Fe. Good morning, Jim. You're on the air.
Good morning. I am a physician, and I have seen up close and personal too much the mayhem guns cause. We have a serious epidemic of violence debate. More people are killed by guns than automobiles. One-third homicides, two-thirds suicide. Homicides are on the 10 o'clock news. The suicides, the family tragedies, each and every one. The House Bill 77 will fix some of these problems, as was pointed out, by just extending the background check to fill out when you go to a gun shop, private sales, and to gun shows, which is where many of the criminals and people with serious psychiatric disease get their guns. My question would be, how can the NRA be against this? It doesn't interfere with the Second Amendment rights, which were clearly spelled out by the Supreme Court. How can they be against this? All it does is prove safety of people living in this country, and also will help stem this terrible epidemic which it is.
So I'm going to pause you right there, Jim. Your signal is cutting in and out, and I just want to clarify, Jim is a physician. That was the little bit that we lost at the beginning. Julianne, what are some of the folks who oppose the kinds of things like background checks? What are some of the arguments in opposition?
One of the biggest arguments that you hear against expanding the background check provisions is that it creates a de facto gun registry. And so to address that a little bit, one of the things I learned in researching what the federally licensed firearms dealers do is that when you fill out that form to have them call up the FBI and conduct a background check, if that check is, if you're clear to buy a weapon, the weapon you purchase is recorded on that form, and the federally licensed dealer retains that form. The way the laws are set up, I'm told, is that, law enforcement can first contact the manufacturer of a weapon and sort of trace the chain of custody, if you will, for that weapon all the way to the federally licensed firearms dealer. Then, however, because of the way the laws are set up now, you can transfer that weapon to, as I mentioned before, your next-door neighbor, anybody, and that's where the record keeping really stops. And so I think you'll hear the folks who want the laws to kind of stay where they are say that that's acceptable, that we don't want the government to have a list of our guns because they'll come and get them someday.
Let's take another call. Glenn in Hema Springs. Good morning, Glenn. You're on the air.
Good morning. Several years ago, we had a priest killed up here by a man who moved into the community who thought this priest had money when there was no money. 2009, we had our cookie bandit kill a sheriff deputy in a very tragic situation. Our vets up here who've been in war, the ones I speak to, don't understand why NRA keeps pushing for us to have assault weapons everywhere. And my wife says, given the millions of dollars that NRA throws at politicians, it's really an unfair playing field when those of us who are concerned want stricter gun control. She says that maybe we're just turning into the United States of the Rifle Association. I hope this isn't happening, but it looks like it could. Thanks for the discussion.
Thanks for your call, Glenn. Let's take another call. Mike in Albuquerque. Good morning, Mike. You're on the air. Mike, are you there? Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call.
I think, Mike, we just lost you, but I hope that you will jump back on the line and call us right back. Let's now go to Juan in Albuquerque. Good morning, Juan. You're on the air. It looks like Juan might have given up waiting. Let's go to Doug in Albuquerque. Good morning, Doug. You're on the air.
Hi, Elaine. I just wanted to go back to what folks were discussing there around a national database. I guess, we get into the whole discussion of whether there ought to be an assault weapon ban or some sort of ban. But I think the real issue is looking at gun control. And I think you're right. It's kind of disingenuous of the NRA to say, well, we are for, making sure that criminals and other people can't get a hold of guns. But then when the whole idea of a national database or some sort of registration is brought up, they back away from that. And I'd really like your panel to kind of discuss a little bit the whole idea of gun registration. And what I mean by that is when you buy a car, you need to go to the DOV and DMV and get a registration for your car. I don't understand why people would balk at the fact that when you purchase a gun, you have to register it. That name and registration, serial number of that gun, all that information is put into a database that the Department of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms maintains, and we just can at least keep track of the guns, because that seems to me to be the initial issue. You need to know whether somebody who is mentally unstable might have a gun, and do that, I think, is through a database. So can people there talk just a little bit more about, how people feel about a database and what the pushback is against that. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
So, Julianne, registration of a gun versus registration of a car.
Well, I think that one of the arguments I've heard has to do with people who don't comply with rules like registering their car. We've heard from some of the opponents to changes in the gun laws that criminals don't use legitimate means to acquire their weapons and wouldn't register them. Same goes, I think, for someone who acquires a gun even though they have a mental health history that would preclude that. And just on that point, I want to let people know that while there are a lot of ways that someone can be identified as having a mental health problem that might, you know, give them a tendency toward violence, there are some very specific things that are reportable to the FBI database. And in New Mexico, there's been a little bit of controversy about what to report. And so right now, the only things that are reported to the federal database with respect to mental health are involuntary commitments to a treatment facility. That's when a judge orders you to be treated against your will. And so, you know, somebody who has suicidal tendencies or has had, you know, expressed thoughts of committing a violent act, maybe to a school counselor or a psychologist, those things aren't really reported. But I know that really wasn't exactly the question.
Well, let me jump in also. We did air an interview with an author named Stephen Halbrook. He is the author of a book that explores the legality around the Second Amendment. And one of the things that we discussed, and you'll be able to find that interview on our website a little bit later this morning. One of the things that we discussed in our interview and that we aired this morning is this idea that in some instances, governments have used things like registering firearms as a form of oppression. And he cited Jim Crow laws in the U.S. as a way of preventing African Americans from being able to have guns by forcing them to get registration from local governments who would not provide those registrations. So there's this interesting, I mean, this is part of this conversation about the Second Amendment and about guns as to why do people maybe want to have guns when the government has, if the government has the power over who has them.
And I think it's also of note that some gun owners are already treated differently by the government. And I'll give you an example. When the state of New Mexico passed its concealed carry law several years ago, the New Mexican wanted to know what that process was like. And so I took the concealed carry course as part of my job. I never intended to carry a concealed weapon. Don't have one today. But I got pulled over for speeding on the interstate a couple of months ago. And my gun permit expired in 2007. But I was asked to get out of my car, stand on the side of the interstate while the police ran and what I assume was an extended criminal check. And when I asked the officer what the problem was, he said, "Ma'am, do you have a weapon?" And I think it's that kind of list keeping that really concerns folks, you know, about these law changes.
Because you showed up as someone who had taken the concealed carry course, ostensibly?
Yeah. I mean, when they ran my license plate because I was going 8 to 10 miles an hour on the over the speed limit on the interstate, I was targeted as somebody who could be, you know, armed and dangerous and, you know, treated as such. And I found that a little alarming. I was surprised by that.
We have Mike back on the line. Let's go to Mike in Albuquerque. Good morning. Thanks for calling back.
Thanks for taking my call, Elaine. I got cut off there. I'd just like to say that I'm a vet and a gun owner and what have you. I'm not crazy about owning guns, just for sport. I want to encourage parents and such to be able to lock up their guns away from minors, and just like anything else, is dangerous in this world. And I think that the last few calamities that happened here in Albuquerque could have been prevented if the guns were locked up away from these minors. And also, I think that people ought to be more expressive when they come across somebody that loosely talks about creating harm. I think more needs to be said when something happens. Many years ago, I was in a bar when somebody said they were going to kill somebody, and an hour later they did it. And I think if we had spoken up, we could have prevented it. And I do think that guns need to be locked up and not in a fancy glass case, because the glass can be broken. And I would just urge there to be more talk publicly on the news, especially urging parents to lock up their guns properly.
Thanks for your call, Mike. Julianne, are there requirements in place now in New Mexico for people to lock guns that are not in use?
Not that I'm aware of, but I'll tell you that in talking with some gunsmiths and gun salesmen about, you know, what they see as a good rule, that's something that's come up time and again, and something that, honestly, I personally didn't think about. You know, one thing they said was that they get calls every day from people who want to know the serial number of a weapon they've purchased because that weapon has been stolen from their car or from their house. And we could have the best background check system possible, but if people are able to walk away with your weapon with relative ease, that's continues to be a problem. And so I think that even, you know, absent a storage law, you can buy a gun safe for between $200 and $600. Most of your weapons are worth that much or more, and it seems like a good, reasonable, prudent investment.
Let's take another call. Talitha Arnold, good morning. You're on the air.
Thank you, Julianne.
Good morning, Talitha.
My name is Reverend Talitha Arnold. I am an ordained United Church of Christ minister in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I serve a congregation here. I am calling in support of HB 77 and other measures that can help reduce the instances of gun violence. I do that both as a pastor and also as an individual. I grew up in a family where my brothers hunted. We had a .22 and a shotgun. I even tried some target shooting as a little kid. But as a pastor over the last 30-plus years, I've stood with too many grieving families bearing and grieving the loss of a loved one who died as a result of gun violence. I've been with people, primarily widows and children whose husbands or fathers have taken their lives as a result of gun violence. And I think the background check closes the HB 77 closes a loophole in the federal Brady bill that is an important loophole to close. It will help reduce such tragedies by taking the time to check the background of someone purchasing a weapon. And I also support HB 77 as the daughter of a decorated World War II vet who was hospitalized 10 years after that war. He was involuntarily committed to a VA hospital with what would now be diagnosed as PTSD. While he was in the hospital, he was granted a two-day pass and was able to go out and bought a gun and shot himself. Had something like the Brady Bill or 77 been in place at that time, my father might have been able to live, get the treatment he needed, and live through my childhood and youth and young adult life. So I don't think the slight delay or inconvenience it might be to have go through a background check is mitigates the or goes against the incredible tragedy of the loss of life.
Thanks for your call, Talitha. Let's go now to Phil in Tijeras. Good morning, Phil. You're on the air.
Good morning. I introduced myself as Phil, but since the previous lady described her occupation, I too am an ordained clergyman. I'm a Lutheran pastor in the East Mountains. And many times in the discussion about this topic, people who are for gun control express a lack of understanding of people who are for gun rights. And I'd like to try to explain while there is a virtuous and righteous cause for allowing people to defend themselves. We hear about gun tragedies, but when guns form a prevention of violence, that isn't broadcast coast to coast like the tragedies are. As a pastor, I've had women who have been stalked by ex-husbands, unable to protect themselves, unable to rely on the policeman. And also, something people often say is, why does anyone need an assault rifle? If you recall the photographs we got from Connecticut after the tragedy at the school, the policemen were all carrying AR-15s. Policemen carry guns for the exact same reason civilians do, and that's for self-defense. Policemen don't use it to punish people. They use it to protect themselves and other citizens. There are times when a society breaks down, like at the riots that were in California a few decades ago, shop owners having AR-15s were able to pacify the area around them and reduce violence. And many times, perhaps even millions of times across the country, someone uses a firearm to prevent a violent act. And we have to understand on both sides that there is a life-preserving argument for the use of guns. And we're in a situation where our society is fairly stable and we have freedoms, but that didn't let us drop our guard for protection of civil liberties. There are times in our own history, a time in the history of other nations, where the government was oppressive, and the ownership of firearms by citizens is one of the strongest preventions of a government that's going to abuse its citizens. We endure certain unpleasantries for the protection of our civil rights, say protection against search and seizures, protection against self-incrimination, sometimes let a criminal go and sometimes let a bad thing happen, but we realize that if we choose to have a free society, we're going to have the strength to say we're going to endure certain things, take rational steps to prevent them, but there has to be a balanced approach between liberty and safety. Thank you.
Thanks so much for your call, Phil. This is the KUNM Call-In Show, and we're talking about the Second Amendment and gun control legislation here in New Mexico. There's several bills have been introduced by lawmakers in Santa Fe that would have a wide range of impacts on gun rights in New Mexico. The number to call locally is 277-5866 if you'd like to weigh in on the conversation. The toll-free number is 877-899-5866. Julianne Grimm is a reporter with the Santa Fe New Mexican, and she's joined us this morning. We're also going to be joined shortly by Bernalillo County Commissioner Debbie O'Malley, and she'll be giving us some details about the county's gun buyback program that was just recently announced. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. This is the KUNM Call-In Show.
She took you back and forth to work. She took you on several road trips. She was a wonderful car, but now it's time to say goodbye. A great way to honor her memory is by donating her to KUNM. You not only get a tax receipt and a membership, but you'll feel good knowing we'll use the funds to bring you all the KUNM programs you can't live without. To schedule a convenient time to pick up your car, running or not, call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
The 18th Annual Xeriscape and Water Conservation Conference and Expo, February 28th through March 3rd, explores Our Water, Our Future, Communication and Cooperation Across Disciplines, presented by the Xeriscape Council of New Mexico and Arid Low Impact Design. Charles Fishman, author of The Big Thirst, The Secret Life and Turbulent Future of Water, keynotes. Info and registration at xeriscapenm.com. A message from the tax-exempt Xeriscape Council of New Mexico.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. It's about 8:32. I'm Elaine Baumgartel, and we're talking about gun control in the Wild Wild West here in New Mexico. A flurry of pieces of legislation have been introduced in Santa Fe by lawmakers who mostly say they want to cut down on gun violence, although their approaches to actually achieving that goal are quite different. We've discussed some concealed carry laws that would increase opportunities for folks to carry concealed weapons into different environments, places like establishments that sell liquor or courthouses and schools. We've also been talking about the expansion of the requirements for background checks when guns are sold. We've been speaking with Julianne Grimm with the Santa Fe New Mexican, and Commissioner Debbie O'Malley joins us this morning. She serves on the Bernalillo County Commission, and you have just announced this week several gun buyback events in Bernalillo County. Briefly, just tell me what prompted you to initiate this process.
Well, given what's occurred, the violence nationally, it's an opportunity for all of us to continue that conversation in our homes and our communities. And I think folks really want to be able to do something, to take action. So this is an opportunity. It's a volunteer program, and it's an anonymous process. The folks who, have made a determination that maybe it's not a good idea to have guns around the home, for a number of reasons, either safety with their family or concerns about safety to the public, that they can have an opportunity to, again, anonymously come to these events. There's one this Saturday, as a matter of fact, at the North Valley Command Center. That's at 6900 4th Street.
And we do have information about the location posted on our website.
So, so they can come in. It's interestingly enough, when we just had the media event, there were some folks that showed up for the media event to surrender their firearms, and knowing, of course, that they will be destroyed.
And that is the firearms that are submitted to this particular program are going to be used in some public art projects?
Well, there was some discussion about that, and that's an ongoing discussion.
Okay.
But essentially, the idea is it's to make them inoperable.
Mm-hmm. If you have questions for Counselor O'Malley on the Bernalillo County Gun Buyback Program, the number to call is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. Let's go back to the phones. Simon in Albuquerque, good morning. You're on the air.
Hello. I just had a question about, I guess, I don't really know what the purpose of the Second Amendment is per se, and I've been hearing a lot about, like, no matter what happens with the gun control legislation, we're going to want to protect people, like gun enthusiasts' rights to own firearms and stuff like that. But is the point of the Second Amendment to protect gun owners' rights, or is it to enable the citizenry to defend themselves against a tyrannical government?
Julianne.
Just throw that question my way.
What is the purpose of the Second Amendment?
You know, I think there's been a lot of debate about that, you know, and certainly if you think about the time that the Constitution was adopted, the purpose of the amendment was probably different to those folks than it is today. And I think that I hear a lot of conversation from what we've started calling the Second Amendment advocate or the pro-gun folks about that, and that really they feel like it's in the Constitution for a reason. I'm not sure that reason is the same for everybody. I think there are certainly people who are concerned that, as I mentioned before, if the government has a list of who owns guns, that there could be a political wind blow through and they will come to your house and take your guns. I think that's something people have heard, that's out there. You also have this self-defense for your home thing that comes up a lot. You know, I think that we had an incident up north in Alcalde where a woman's, answered her door. A man came in and attempted to rape her, and she shot him in the head. And I think that those, you know, two instances are reasons you hear a lot for why the Second Amendment is important.
In your reporting, what have you found with respect to statistics on the use of guns in a defensive and successfully defensive manner?
You know, I don't know that I have a really good statistic about that. I would like to say that we hear often, as one of the callers said just a few minutes ago, that the media doesn't report positive gun use, if you will, you know, that we don't report when a gun is used to prevent a violent act. And I just think that's patently untrue, that, local journalists are interested in reporting the happenings in their community, despite the perception of how that will sound. And so certainly when we hear about things like that in Santa Fe, they land in the newspaper. I'm sure that my colleagues in other markets feel the same way.
Let's take another call. Ron in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning. Good morning. Thanks for taking the call. It's a very interesting conversation about what's the real meaning of the Second Amendment. And I would suggest, that's not what I was calling about, but I would suggest it probably might come from our immigrant experience in other countries, in Great Britain, where natural rights and the right to hold a weapon was probably held in as high importance, and not necessarily for any of the reasons we're thinking about, like for self-defense, but just as a right, just as we see the right to drive a car. And related to that, sort of the greater utility, sort of Jeremy Bentham, old British philosopher, old meaning from 1832, talked about our natural rights and that they can't be totally unfettered, that it's sort of like nonsense upon stilts. If everybody has every right, that's a quote of his. But what's important, I think, is like driving a car requires that you have a title to the car and a license and a certain competency. And I would see no problem in interfering with the right to hold a gun if you have a title to it and the competency to use it. Now, maybe this title becomes an issue when someone steals it, but part of the competency would be able to report if your gun is lost or stolen, just like with your automobile. Maybe there should be, and I know I'd get into trouble here in a more public debate, but maybe there should be a license fee, an annual fee for this title and right, and, you know, that could go into other state mental health programs, something like that. But it does seem like the idea of tracking the gun is not unreasonable because, like an automobile, automobiles are stolen. Sometimes they're never recovered. But the fact of the matter is, after it's gone, you as the owner no longer want to have the liability for where it goes and what's done with it. So, therefore, you're encouraged to report it. I think the same thing is true of a gun, and I wonder what Julianne might respond to that.
First, I just want to point out that the author of a book called That Every Man Be Armed, The Evolution of a Constitutional Right, his name is Stephen Holbrook. The book has been released in a new edition from the University of New Mexico Press, and it is, at least according to the quotes on the back of the book, it is widely considered to be the first scholarly exploration of the Second Amendment. I did do a brief interview with him. I'll be posting that interview online at our website, where we talked about motivations for the founding fathers when they were writing the Second Amendment and the kind of context in which the amendment came to be and how views of the amendment have changed over the years. He specifically spoke about how in the early 1980s, when he first published this book, it was something that was not, I mean, he said it was the Second Amendment was just never discussed. He went to law school and it was never an issue that was even really discussed at all. So it's an interesting kind of ebb and flow of attention to this particular aspect of the Constitution, which clearly does distinguish guns from cars on a certain level. Julianne, do you have thoughts on that?
I think that there's a number of really interesting issues that go into the registration argument or the, you know, keeping a list of who has which gun argument. And one that I just want to throw out there that came up actually Monday night at the House Judiciary Committee was that there are millions, maybe there are billions of guns in the world. In the United States, we know there are probably more than anywhere else. And that trying to get a handle on who has all those weapons and what the serial numbers are is, I think, safe to say, an insurmountable task. And another issue is that there are many weapons that are considered relics. And you'll see this phrase come up in House Bill 77. Things that are antique or relic would actually be exempt from this expanded background check that Representative Garcia is proposing. One of the main reasons for that is because those weapons do not have a serial number. And by engraving a serial number on them, you're sort of, you know, it's like putting a sticker on something.
Or damaging the value of antique items.
Right. That's been brought up. And sort of how you deal with the weapons that are already existing. And again, it comes back to this issue of criminals who obtain weapons outside of the background check system are never going to, you know, put those numbers on a piece of paper for the government. So the only time law enforcement has access to the background check records is when they find a gun that's been used in a crime. And again, they take that serial number back to the manufacturer. That's where they start tracking the process. And as the caller just mentioned, once a weapon has been sold between an individual, unless the seller has maintained a record, which they all recommend, law enforcement kind of hits a wall there.
Councilor O'Malley, the buyback program that starts this weekend in Bernalillo County, explain any kinds of record keeping at all? Should anyone be concerned about any kind of record keeping with respect to turning in guns through this program?
Well, the idea is that folks can sell their weapons back to the county anonymously, so no questions will be asked. This issue came up about, well, what about guns that have, historical value or you know, or antiques or whatever. It will be interesting to see how many of those guns are you know, surrendered. I don't think there's going to be too many of them. So,
what about stolen guns?
Yes,
what about people who may be in possession of a stolen gun somehow?
Right. They will be checked, you know, to see if they're stolen once we receive them. But once we receive them, you know, then, you know, the whoever is submitting them is, or, you know, for compensation, you know, that's a no questions asked issue. But once we receive them, if we find out that they have been stolen, you know, we'll try to contact the owner.
So the philosophy is it's better to get that gun off the street than it is to try to catch somebody as being in possession of a stolen gun.
Right. The idea is absolutely that's the case. And so people feel comfortable about, you know, taking in a weapon. And again, it's a volunteer program. People don't have to participate if they don't want to.
And I guess that would be the same for folks whose immigration status is undocumented or something like that, that the anonymity extends even to that.
Right. Some people ask, you know, we're going to be taking pictures, writing down license plates. No, we're not. You know, this isn't a sting or anything. The idea is to, as I said, make it, you know, for people to feel comfortable that they can come in.
Let's take another call. Bill in Albuquerque. Good morning, Bill. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm a psychologist here in town. I've been in practice some 30-some-odd years. And I want to comment about two aspects of this issue. First is one of the things I do in my work is to do evaluations for people who are going to be police officers or people who are going to carry guns in other settings, for example, as guards, security guards, and things of that sort. And in order, by state law, in order for people to be able to do that, they have to go, A, through a full background check, and people who have any felonies in their records do not get admitted, or even people who have serious offenses in their records will not pass that first hurdle. But then when they come into my office, I'm required to do a thorough interview to find out whether there's any serious mental health history that might give rise to instability. And then I give psychological tests that also go to that issue. And if there's any sign that the person is unstable, then they're eliminated from the process. And there's no question about it on the part of the employer. There's no question on the part of anybody that if there's instability in the person's history, then they're out of the picture.
But folks who you deem to be unstable enough to the point where they cannot proceed with their law enforcement training are still people who could go buy a gun at a gun show or at a pawn shop, right?
That's exactly my point.
And so are you advocating for a type of registry of folks that have been rejected from law enforcement?
No, not at all.
Okay.
All I'm saying is that if we, you hand a handgun, you know, a person goes into their local big box store and buys a protection weapon, and they have to make a decision at their front door about whether they're going to shoot somebody or not. Do they, you know, they haven't been through this kind of experience. They haven't been through this kind of training yet. They're still using the same kind of deadly force that a security guard or a police officer would be using. And we have given them the right to do that by allowing them to purchase a weapon. So at the very least, I think we ought to have a comprehensive background search to make sure that we aren't dealing with somebody who has a mental health history that could give rise to instability or somebody who has a criminal history that might give rise to the same thing.
Great. Thanks for your call, Bill. Julianne, your thoughts?
I just wanted to talk a little bit more about the mental health records that are contemplated by Brady as being part of the national instant check system and the records that actually make their way to the system. And this has been something that came up. That Congress actually passed a new law in 2007 or passed an act to try to encourage states to provide more mental health records. We had the Virginia Tech shooting in 2007 where the shooter was somebody who was, as this caller explained, you know, found by multiple professionals to be unstable. But absent a judge involuntarily committing you in the state of New Mexico, Or you being found, you know, charged with a felony and being found incompetent to stand trial. You know, absent one of those circumstances, your mental health records, your child's mental health records are not part of the criminal or the instant database. And I think that's an issue that, you know, Congress has discussed, and you're hearing that discussed with respect to suicide prevention, which I think is another really important issue that really, you know, we should be talking about.
The increased scope of background checks, the bill that was introduced by Miguel Garcia, that bill doesn't have anything in it that has to do with mental health records, correct?
Today's version doesn't.
Okay.
I have seen some, you know, floated versions that would contemplate that a bit more. And I've heard that, you know, the governor's interested in that. In fact, I asked the governor's office for a statement about House Bill 77. And rather than commenting on the provisions of the, preliminary proposal, the statement I got back from the governor's office was that they were most concerned about making sure that the appropriate mental health records were in the federal database. So I think that's something that Governor Martinez is aware of and perhaps trying to have some action on.
Let's take another call. Charlie in Taos. Good morning, Charlie. You're on the air.
Good morning. Say, I'm calling from the rural area of the state just to point out a couple of things that might not be taken into account as we discuss weapons in the state of New Mexico. First of all, this state has a long history of guns being a major part of the background of our state, especially in the rural areas. Almost all rural people are engaged in hunting of one kind of another. And also, if you're in a remote rural area, having a gun of some kind is kind of a mandatory thing, both for your personal protection against other human beings and also possibly against wildlife. And some of the sweeping laws that are being suggested, such as locking up all weapons and things of that sort by the more urban representatives in our state legislature, that's just not going to fly in the rural areas. There's no use in having a gun to protect yourself from a break-in if, in fact, you're going to have to unlock it in a critical moment. So, you know, I'm coming from the perspective of someone that's – I'm certainly not in favor of AR-47s and large magazines, which are not necessary for anything other than killing other people in quick fashion. But I also would like in the state conversation to remind people that this is a rural state that has a lot of people that are very familiar with how to use and how to take care of weapons, and you can't push too far on your rural constituents.
Thanks for your call, Charlie. Let's go to Nicole in Albuquerque. Good morning, Nicole. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I've found the show really interesting this morning because I have some personal opinions about guns, but I honestly am trying to put that on the back burner because I think it's kind of irrelevant. I work for a labor union, so when I look at an argument and I look what's written, I try to look at it very objectively. And so what I'm hearing is, for me, this comes down to a fairness and equity issue. You know, if dealers that are federally licensed, you know, have to do this background check and submit all this paperwork, and then the guns have to be registered, you know, to these owners per their numbers, then why is that not the same for everyone? So if you're selling a gun, it just seems logical that that would be imposed upon everyone. So it's only imposed on a few and not everyone. So it comes down to fairness and equity. Whichever side, you know, of the issue you're on, if we're going to do that for some people, that dealers that are federally licensed have to do this to, you know, to their the people that they're selling to, then everyone else should. Or they shouldn't have to do it at all, and it's a free-for-all.
Got
it. So that's my comment on that.
Thanks, Nicole. Let's go to Matthew in Santa Fe. Good morning, Matthew. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and I'll keep it brief to make time for other callers. I'm a member of the New Mexico Committee for the Prevention of Gun Violence in Santa Fe. It's a grassroots group that just started. And obviously, I'm in support of HB 77.
Which is the expanded background checks, right?
Yes. And basically, the first thing I really want to say is it's not about taking away Second Amendment rights. It's about gun safety and saving lives. Over a 10-year period, the FBI conducted, about 100 million background checks, leading to about 700,000 denials. So clearly there is evidence that folks are trying to obtain weapons when they are prohibited from doing so. Santa Fe's gun buyback program resulted in about 194 guns. So people are eager to really participate in making our lives more safe. Another issue particularly important about New Mexico is the fact that the gun shows are areas where gun trafficking is happening with assault weapons, and we need to put a stop on that, and that's where the background checks come into play. So anyway, that's all I wanted to say, and thank you very much for having the discussion on the issue, very important issue.
Thanks for your comments, Matthew. Julie, your thoughts?
I just wanted to throw out that while we can't trust 100% the statistics about that question, I've seen numbers that up to 30% of the guns that are purchased in our country actually are purchased from those methods outside the background check system. So that's a good stat to keep in mind.
That we have an email comment from Miranda. She writes that she says at some point the arguments of House Bill 77 expanding background checks, she says arguments of opponents to that kind of thing become silly. She writes, this law simply protects gun owners from being the unfortunate person who unwittingly sells her firearm to someone who, God forbid, carries out the next Sandy Hook. And she writes, it's hard to imagine that any gun owner would rather take that risk than go through a simple background check. Also got a couple of comments from folks supporting the idea of treating guns like cars with respect to registration. I want to come back to you, Counselor O'Malley.
Commissioner.
I'm sorry, Commissioner, <It's okay>. Forgive me. <That's impressive. laughs> Commissioner O'Malley, I want to come back to you about the Bernalillo County's buyback program. Again, the first event is on Saturday this weekend.
This Saturday.
And information, of course, on the Bernalillo County website. But briefly describe again the way that this works for folks who want to perhaps get rid of the guns in their households.
Okay, the event will be from 9 to 3 o'clock, and it's at the first one is it's this Saturday, 6900 4th Street. Really, it's, anonymous surrender. We'll be giving prepaid Visa cards and $100 for a long gun, rifle, shotguns, $150 for a handgun, and then on the high-capacity weapons, semi-automatic, magazine-fed, those types, it's $200.
How many people are you expecting, do you think?
You know, it should be interesting. As I mentioned, just at the press, the media event, we had folks already who wanted to participate in the program. Santa Fe's program, my understanding is they didn't even the whole day. They ran out of money midway. So we do have more money attached to this program.
Julie, you were nodding your head about the Santa Fe gun buyback program.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw out that Santa Fe also announced a second gun buyback. It's also happening on Saturday.
With a refreshed cash drawer, apparently.
Apparently. And there are some issues about just how much money the cities can afford to put out, you know, given the big response. I also wanted to say that if you miss an opportunity to do a gun buyback, you can always take your weapon to a dealer to get rid of it because we don't have registration laws. You're not going to be in trouble.
Thanks, Julianne Grimm. She is a reporter with the Santa Fe, New Mexican Commissioner Debbie O'Malley from Bernalillo County. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. This has been the KUNM Call-In Show. We'll post audio from the show online right after the show. You can email tips and comments to callinshow@kunm.org or post your comments online. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Next week, we will be taking a break from the Call-In Show on Valentine's Day, and we've got a great show scheduled for you. You can find details online at kunm.org.